This is episode 2 of season 4, Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, featuring Kate Gardner from Triple Win Advisory.
You're listening to Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, featuring inspiring stories from women in green business, sustainability, and conservation. Here's your host, Barbara Lee.
As we continue to move through this season, what else do we need to get to a sustainable future? Like Sophia said in episode 1, it's not only on consumers to change the world, businesses and corporations also need to be held accountable. How do we get companies to start thinking about their unsustainable business practices? The excess packaging, international shipping, manufacturing waste? Europe is leagues ahead of the US on creating what are called extended producer laws, where companies who create packaging without a plan for recollecting that packaging have to end up paying an environmental tax. It works. Many European brands use glass instead of plastic because glass is 100% recyclable for its entire lifetime. I wanted to speak to Kate because she's a corporate sustainability consultant, meaning she goes to these companies and helps them understand the impact that their business has on the planet. We get into some nitty-gritty details about manufacturing, and Kate gives us an inside look of what it's like to have these types of conversations. Let's get trash talking. Hey, Kate, welcome to Trash Talking.
Hi, thanks so much. It's good to meet you.
Can you tell our listeners who you are and what it is that you do?
My name is Kate Gardner. I'm the founder and CEO of a company called Triple Win Advisory. And Triple Win is a corporate sustainability consultancy that focuses on business circularity, education, and implementation.
Okay, so that's a lot. What does that actually mean? What do you do on a daily basis?
What I do on a daily basis with my clients is one of four or five different things. I either help them to perform carbon inventories to measure their carbon footprint. I identify company stakeholders and then go out and talk with them about their concerns about how the business operates. I also execute, facilitate, and customize stakeholder engagement workshops. So that could be anywhere around workshops that are socializing the corporate sustainability initiatives of a company. It could be working with companies' green teams and just really aligning their efforts and measuring their progress and success. But it also could just very well be, hey, talking to employees, educating them on what sustainability is and making it really personal and applicable to their own lives.
Give us an example of the type of companies you're working with.
I like to work with brand-centric, consumer-focused manufacturing companies. Now, I don't always work with those types of companies, but those are the companies that I feel have a lot of quote-unquote influences or pressures on them to do the right thing around corporate sustainability. Companies in the food and beverage world. I work with cosmetic and beauty manufacturers. I work in apparel and footwear with those types of clients. But I also work with, you know, more and more digital marketplaces.
Are you working with the company themselves or are you working with their manufacturers?
So no, I don't work with their tier one, tier two, even tier three suppliers or partners, right? The ones that are actually procuring the textiles and cutting clothing and then completing the finished goods. I do work with the Nikes and the L'Oreals and the Keens of the world to put in supplier codes of conducts, put frameworks in place so that they can go out to their suppliers and say, hey, listen, this is what's important to me or us around sustainability. I want it to be important to you. And so these are new policies that we've been putting into place that are going to apply to you now and into the future.
So I haven't heard about these tiers before, and I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit more. Can you educate us on what tier one and tier two mean?
When you're looking at a company that has a product, it has their name on a product that you can buy off the shelf at Target, right? Let's say it's makeup manufacturer or a company that makes kombucha, right, in glass jars. They have tier one suppliers, and they often are the manufacturers, the facilities that make the finished product. Tier two suppliers, so that we're looking upstream, are the ones that might source portions of that product.
That's interesting. I never thought of that before. So when you're going into these companies and pick any company that you work with, I'd love to kind of understand what these conversations are like. So you go in for a meeting and then what, you're telling them that they need to reduce their tier one and tier two packaging materials or just stop producing so much?
There's different types of companies that I work with. So if it's a public company, they'll likely want to procure a third party to do a certain aspect of their sustainability agenda, right? And so we're often being asked to help them perform the materiality assessment, to go out to all their stakeholders, to have those conversations, execute all those surveys, do the analysis on that, and then build a materiality map for what they should prioritize around ESG. ESG is an acronym that refers to environmental, social, and governance topics of concern to corporations, right? So it's future thinking. A materiality assessment is done so that you can look future forward on initiatives that a company wants to prioritize. They also, you know, public companies, bigger companies that are doing corporate sustainability, have been doing it for a while. They'll also bring Triple Win in to execute sustainability engagement workshops with their employees, right? There are other companies that I'm working with that are B Lab members, and they're a little bit smaller. They might be in like the 50 to 100, 150 million revenue range. They've hand raised and said, listen, this is important to us. They might have already set a climate neutral goal, like a carbon neutral goal for themselves, but it is just a declaration. And so they haven't really done the deep work, the carbon inventory, the carbon calculation work that you need to do to set a baseline, then to set targets to reduce that total carbon emissions number, right? So they'll bring in Triple One to do that. Lastly, I would say that I've been working with some companies that are on the cusp of going IPO. So they're in this period of time of high growth, but also trying to ready themselves to go public. And they're hearing from potential financial investors the question, what are you doing around your ESG?
What's usually the impetus for a company to bring you in for these assessments?
The public companies that have been doing this a lot, I am just part of moving their agenda forward. Any other company that is a B Lab member or, you know, a benefit, registered benefit corp, or a company that's going IPO that has been asked to think and disclose their ESG concerns, we're coming in because they need to do something around that. They need to put a plan in place effectively.
Give us the inside look. So tell us more about what these conversations are like. Do people get that this is what they need to do? Or are you kind of working there and struggling through educating them on what their impact is for every single part of their business?
They are. They only have to if they're going public, right? So otherwise, if you are not going public, I think a lot of the companies that have come to me have a fear, sort of like this low-level fear, this anxiety that they are target customers are millennials and Gen Z. They're like, you know, we know that they care about sustainability and we say that we have sustainable practices, but we're not really doing anything around that.
Shifting the conversation a little bit here, why is sustainability important to you and how can other people get into this type of work?
I mean, I think what would catalyze me to get deeper into corporate sustainability is my prior entrepreneurial venture as a manufacturer of sustainable women's activewear, right? So I had that business for about 10 years, founded it in New York, and I was steeped in this. So I decided that I was going to go out and manufacture clothing that was going to be near 100% with organic fibers. And so I started that process. I also opened up a flagship store in Brooklyn, New York. And in that store, I didn't just sell clothing. So I sold accessories, you know, Pilates and yoga accessories. I sold body products and, you know, healthcare products. And I made sure it was sort of my mission, my vision that anyone, any supplier that I was going to bring into that store had to be creating product that was, you know, 100% organic, 100% our natural, biodegradable, compostable, right? And so that was the mission and vision of my business. I think I told you before when we spoke, people would come in, right? Customers would come into my store. And it was kind of a little bit of a rude awakening because I was really excited about what I was showcasing there. But they're like, you know what? You know, the captain asked me to look back further into my upstream value chain. Well, you know, you say that you're making clothing with organic and, you know, organic and sustainable fibers, right? But what about the threads? What about the ink? What about your packaging? What about your hang tags, right? They just kept on going further back and they didn't always have the answers. And I also didn't feel like I had the influential power to have those conversations to make changes in there. And so then from that experience, I actually had an opportunity to move abroad to Europe with my family, lived there for about 5 years, and really saw how sustainability was perceived and implemented on various scales there. I then came back to the United States and went back to get my master's of science in sustainable management. And you could focus on anything, right? But I decided that I was going to focus in industry on industrial ecology concepts, which is now just business circularity, so that I could affect meaningful change within the operations, within the supply chain, the supply chains, value chains of companies. So that's how I got into corporate sustainability. But to answer sort of your secondary question, how do people get into this? I think they just care. They care. They are passionate about it. It provides meaning to their life. And they just have to pick a path for themselves, you know, whether that's, you know, in the public sector, in the private sector, in non-governmental organizations. And then where do they want to focus, right? Is it renewable? Is it transportation? Is it the food and agricultural industries? I mean, there's just so much that needs to be done in sustainability, right? All our systems need to change. So there's great opportunity within sustainability.
There's so much that we've been told to do like our entire lives. I think recycling is a really good example of this, right? Less than 10% of recyclable material is actually recycled. So how do we change the system so that it forces change in our behavior? And it sounds like in your career path, you actually went after changing the system.
I always talk about this, and I don't think people really realize it, but we became a consumer society and we really promoted consumption all the time, continuous consumption, continuous growth. It was a post-World War II construct, right? We didn't, you know, the United States was a huge power globally. That's waning right now, but it was a huge power globally. And they said, oh my God, we're not fighting a war anymore. And so our economy is going to go into recession. How do we keep production at the same level, but not fall into a recession? Oh, well, why don't we actually get people to continue to consume and want to consume more all the time? That's when the advertising industry came into play, right? It was all like, we started thinking, well, if we consume and we have this and that, that's going to make us more attractive and better and more exciting, right? And so these are cultural constructs that we need to break down and change to change the systems.
And Kate, why is sustainability to you personal? Why did you pursue this for your career?
I think that I saw how much waste was in the manufacturing, the apparel manufacturing industry. I saw the volume of inventory to be produced, right? Not just of me, but everyone that in that industry, right? It was cheaper to go to China and make 10, 15, 20 times more product so that you could knock off $3 to $5 per unit. But then you had to figure out what you were going to do with all that inventory. Right. So it's just an overflow of inventory. And it was, and also just the waste on the cutting room floors in these facilities, how much just goes literally to the floor and thrown away. I think there was just sort of this general disgust of like, this is not sustainable. This is very unsustainable.
I saw that you lived abroad for a bit, and I know that Europe has better laws that result in actually less environmental impact because the responsibility does end up falling on producers.
Yeah, I mean, so Europe is ahead of the game in sustainability on all levels, right? They've taken the rose-colored glasses off and they realize that they are lacking in natural resources and they have to do something to maintain what exists today to preserve their way of life and their livelihoods and their economies. They just have an older and a more acute perspective on what's happening all across the globe.
That's a fair point. And I'm going to link to some of those extended producer responsibility laws for the EU in the show notes. Kate, what advice do you have for someone who may just be starting out, or maybe they want to pursue a career in sustainability?
I would say pursue it. Go for it. I don't think there's anything more meaningful than trying to and successfully going about mitigating climate change. It is our existential crisis. So don't be afraid. There is a lot of opportunity. Just gain practical experience.
Cool. Love that. Last question, Kate. What are some of the biggest myths you've heard while having these conversations with corporations?
There's this huge awareness that companies have to calculate their carbon emissions, right? Their carbon footprints. But there's a lot of companies, non-public companies, right? Private companies that are declaring carbon neutral goals for themselves. And they think they declare it. They calculate their scope one and two emissions, which is anything that they own, right? Scope one emissions, like cars that they own or buildings that they own. And then all their electricity use is scope two. So if they think that they're just going to calculate scope one and two emissions and then just go out and pay for carbon offsets, that makes them feel good. They pat themselves on the back, they raise their hand, and like, we're carbon neutral. And that is not doing anything. That's green wishing. You've done something, but literally nothing has changed in your operations. You are still emitting carbon and a lot of other greenhouse gas emissions, and you haven't done the hard work.
Wow, Kate, thank you again so much for taking the time to chat with us and educate us on this topic. I've learned so much, and I really do think that our listeners have as well.
Thanks, Barbara. It was good to talk with you as well.
If you enjoyed that conversation that we had with Kate and you want to learn more, check out Kate's website, kategardner.com. There's a link in the show notes. And Kate has actually been generous enough to offer us a 50% discount on her DIY sustainability cards when you purchase her book, Plant a Seed. We've also included two gifts from a couple other partners, Plain Products and also Eco Lunchbox. You may have remembered both of these companies from previous episodes of Trash Talking. So again, visit us on social at Trashy Beauty Co. Follow us, comment on the post, and you'll be entered to win. We've also got some video clips from an extended conversation that we have with Kate at her home in Portland. We spoke about the type of work that we need to do between now and for us to achieve a fully sustainable future. We have a lot to think about when it comes to the impact we create in our everyday lives and when operating a business. Next week, we'll be revisiting a conversation with one of our favorite and most popular guests that we had in season two. We might give you a hint as to who it is on Instagram, so head over there. Go enter the giveaway and also give us a follow so you never miss an episode. Thanks for listening, Eco Warriors. Stay green.
Trash Talking with Eco Warriors is produced by Hansel Rodriguez, production assistance by Belinda Chu, and hosted by Barbara Lee. Thanks for listening to Trash Talking with Eco Warriors. For more inspiration, follow us on Instagram at Trashy Beauty Co.